We thank you for taking the time to listen to this teaching from Metro Church. We hope this inspiring message will empower and enrich your life.
Now listen, I know this probably hasn't happened to any of you because your life is always perfect. But today I kind of want to speak to you, not necessarily from a place of strength, but from a place of weakness. And because we're all real, we're genuine, right? We're genuine doesn't mean you're perfect, it just means you're raw. Something I like to call being raw authentic. It's as authentic as you can be, but you're raw about it, and it's just, it is what it is. And God actually wants you to live that kind of raw authentic life because he already sees you for who you are anyway. He sees beyond your mask. He sees below that stuff. But so when I'm talking about this, I know you've never dealt with this, but just humor me, okay? Some time ago, I found out a friend recently made some decisions that weren't very friendly towards me. Never happened to you, only to me. Okay? Not in here. Don't try and figure it out. I'm just talking because this is something that I've just walked through, and we all have to walk through stuff, don't we? And you know what? In fact, when I found out about it and brought it to their attention, which matters, by the way, which we'll talk more about. If somebody does something, you need to bring it to their attention because sometimes they may not even know they're doing it, and you're just getting angry and upset over something that they haven't, you haven't given them the ability to make right. We'll talk more about that later. When I brought it to their attention, though, although they gave the indication that they low-key knew they were guilty, they also didn't really do anything about it. You know what I'm talking about. In fact, the statements that were made didn't deny what had happened, you know, but however, they didn't exactly apologize either. Never happened to you, only to me, I get it. Continue. It put me in an interesting state. Want to know why? Because I found myself confused, hurt, frustrated upon many other things. Now, I know it's easy to just simply say, well, I need to forgive him and move on. But it's not always easy to forgive and move on. Maybe I'm hearing some of you are involved in this. So I spoke with my wife in an impromptu marital venting session. You know what that is. On a hard topic, you know, I believe that having a spouse, the best thing about that is being able to just let them help you through your stuff. And so, impromptu marital session, you know, venting session, venting one way. She, of course, I don't know if you know it, but she is the patient encourager. She is patient. She will encourage you. She will encourage your patience. But how do we deal with offense and get over it when the offender doesn't seem remorseful? I want to go there today. Because the reality is, I know I'm not the only one dealing with it. I let you just kind of trickle in like it's not really your problem. But I know you deal with it too. We all deal with this. And so how many know it's much easier to forgive someone who seems to feel the weight of what they did? Right? So I found myself in this place where my heart hurt and my head was angry. And in the middle of my wallowing and going off on all the reasons this person should have been better and done better towards me, and after all, I've deserved better. I've been nothing but good to that person. We all think that, right? We all think we're always perfect. Like, I've done nothing but good to you. After all, I am good. God said, Jesus said, why do you call me good? There's only one who's good. But we think we're always good. Okay, I'm preaching to somebody. See, I realized I can't change who they are. I can't change what they did. I can't change how they respond when I bring the issue to the light. All I can do is choose how I respond to it. And I've come to realize all God, when we stand before the judgment seat, he's going to ask us and he's going to be talking to us about how we responded to things. How we handled our business, how we handled his business through our lives. And so all that's within my power is to determine where I go from here, and this is the place I call the crossroads. I want to talk to you about when you come to the crossroads. The decisions we make, which road will I choose to take, because they lead to two very different destinations. And what I need to tell you is, I've learned that the devil is always hanging out at the crossroads looking to make a deal. He's always hanging out the crossroads, looking to make a deal, playing off of your emotions, playing off of your hurts. And normally the way he does it is through validating the way you feel. And as humans, all we want to know is someone hears us and someone feels us and someone understands what we're going through. But the one to speak up first tends to be the devil, who's leading us the wrong way. And so when we were standing at the crossroads, I've got to be very aware I'm in a very vulnerable situation. I'm in a vulnerable place in life because I know I'm hurt. I know I'm angry. You know, I always talk about this thing that a lot of psychologists call HALTs. You should never make a serious decision when you're hungry, when you're angry, when you're lonely, and when you're tired. HALTs, right? But we always find ourselves at the crossroads when those are happening. But that's not by accident. They're testing moments. For you to think God doesn't test you is silly. It's actually ignorance. Because God is always testing his children, not for them to fail, but for them to succeed. Because he knows, listen, I need you to understand something. God doesn't grade on a scale. It's not A through F, it's A or F. What does that mean? If I don't get this right, I'll be at this intersection again because I will take the test again. Absolutely. It's important for you to know that, because the more I take serious the moments, the more quickly I can get beyond it. But he doesn't go, well, you got to see, we'll let you slide. No, you're either going to get it right or you're going to go through it again. Tell your neighbor, I'm going to get it right or I'm going to go through it again. So are you. Stop looking at me. Okay. That was rude. But let me tell you, the devil is always at the crossroad looking to play on your emotions and lead you off of your road. This is the key. He's looking to lead you off your road. In other areas of your life, you might like to go off-roading. This is not one of the places you want to go off the road, because this is what Matthew 7 tells me. It says this, but small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. What does that mean? God, if I'm going to continue to go the direction you're calling me, it's not going to be easy. I can barely step to the left or the right because that's where I'm going to fall. Sometimes people say, oh, Christianity is the easy life. It's an easy walk. I'm like, no, it's a tightrope. Thankfully, God is our security net and the Holy Spirit gives us wings. But narrow is the road that leads to life. I'm not looking to be dead forever, y'all. I was in Texas. Y'all still works for at least 24 days, not hours. It just kind of extends. But listen, here's the thing I want to talk to you today about with the rest of the time I have. These are questions to ask and to answer at the crossroads. Are you ready for this? Number one, do I want to stay offended or regain contentment? You have to ask yourself that. I'm too hurt to think. Well, you better sit down and not make any decisions until you find somebody that can help walk you through the process, because you have to think through what you're about to do. You have to be able to ask yourself some questions, and you have to honestly answer the questions. Do I want to stay offended, or do I want to regain contentment? Do I want to be happy, or do I want to stay offended? It's easy to allow offense to enslave and entrap you. That's one thing I've come to realize. It's far more difficult to fight to regain your freedom and happiness, because offense actually handcuffs you. Something I've always been taught through Bible college, through leadership training, through all the things I've done, you need to learn to be the least offendable person in the room. The least offendable person in the room. Am I the least offendable person in the room? If someone's talking to me, do I take it? Well, you know, regardless of who says it, do I take it for the truth and the value? Am I willing to take it and not just get defensive about it, not get offended by it? Because the Bible tells me better are wounds from a friend than kisses from an enemy. You've been smooching with everybody. Frankie, Al, sorry, Home Alone, still on in my head. Listen, do I want to stay offended or do I want to regain contentment? Proverbs 17 says this, overlook an offense and bond a friendship. Fasten on to a slight or to an offense and goodbye, friend. We get to choose what happens. In this moment, he chose to not be that great of a friend to me, but I'm reminded how often I'm not that great of a friend to Jesus. And I think as though it's easy for us to position ourselves into the position of God when someone wrongs us, forgetting how we wrong God all the time. See, I remember that God calls us to be more like him, not more like how you think he wants you to be. He wants you to be more like Jesus. See, if Jesus didn't come and show us how to live, then it'd be very hard to figure out everything. But God literally came in flesh, showed us how to live, and showed us what it's like to turn the other cheek, what it's like to forgive when they're not remorseful. And that's hard. That's hard, but it's right. So if I choose to overlook an offense, I can bond a friendship. I can galvanize a friendship. I can TIG weld a friendship. But if I choose to hold on to that slight, if I choose to continue to put wood on the fire, the Bible also says, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. What does that mean? Sometimes if you just shut your trap, time heals all things. Not if every time you're throwing wood on the fire. If and someone's like, he just shut your trap. That was very offensive. That hurt me deeply. I'm leaving and I'm going to go tell somebody on Facebook about what I just experienced in this place. No, I'm just trying to tell you that if I choose to continue to make the problem a problem, if I fixate on the problem, rather than asking God to help me fix the problem, are you following me? All I'm going to have is a problem, and I'm going to lose a friend. Do I want to hold on to the offense at the price of my friendship is what I'm asking you. Another version in that proverb says, whoever would foster love covers an offense. Man, will I be the one that fosters love even when the other person's really hard to love? Hard to love, girl. You don't make it easy. Sorry. It just always happens in my head, and I just don't always share it with you. I'm hard to love, hard to... Texas, country. It's all coming back. Listen, whoever would foster love covers an offense. So what's the first question? Do I want to stay offended or regain contentment? The second question, do I want to stay bitter or get better? And you go, well, that's so catchy. I've heard that before. Yeah, but it's true. Do I want to get better in this situation? Do you want it to go away? Sometimes wallowing becomes comfortable. Eeyore never looked happy. But he never changed either. He was comfortable wallowing. Everyone, next time you see that person, you're going to imagine their face as Eeyore. You're going to go, that makes total sense. Listen, have you ever seen a pig wallowing in the mud? I mean, to me, that's gross. I'm one person that takes more showers than I need to. I've got a thing. We've all got things, okay? I used to work with animals. Maybe you've seen a chinchilla rolling around in the ash and the dust to clean itself off. A chinchilla will roll around in mountain ash to keep oils and stuff off of its fur. Either way, sometimes it actually will look fun. And when you're in the middle of it, you stop thinking about the mud and you start thinking about how you feel. See, gossip and a revenge tour and ruining the other person's name, an eye for an eye, only makes it harder to ever forgive and move on. And wallowing, I'm telling you, rolling around the mud, I like to liken that to just continually talking about the problem. When are you going to stop rolling around in the mud? But when I talk about my problem and other people, they understand me and they validate my problems, it makes me feel good. Yeah, but you still have the same problem. Now more people know about the problem, so you're actually making it worse. You may be feeling better, but you're making it worse. Because now you're throwing mud. You're slinging mud. You're not dealing. Matthew says that when you have a problem with someone, you go to the person. You don't go to another person about the person to see what they think, then go to another person about the person to see what they think. I'm getting a multitude of counsel. How about we first just go to the person and talk to them about the problem and see if there's any need for further counsel? There's more misunderstandings than there are missteps most of the time. Just go to the person. Stop rolling around in the mud. In my moment, dealing with this situation, I didn't want to bring the issue right to God because I knew I was angry, and I know he wouldn't allow me to sit and stew. He wouldn't allow me to wallow in it. And all I wanted to do was wallow. I vent with my wife, and she gives me godly advice. I wanted to throw a pity party, and I wanted to wallow in it. I knew God wouldn't be a good attender of that party, so I didn't invite him. I am allotted a season to process, I told my wife. The Bible tells me in Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, and I'm upset right now. Here's the issue. I can't turn what should have been hours into days or months, even years, and begin to justify it. The length of the time it takes me to get through something depends on two things. The severity of the something, right? And my understanding of God. Because the more I understand what God has allowed me, what he has given me in mercy and what he's given me in grace and what he's given me in forgiveness, all the times I don't deserve it, the more I focus on how wretched I am and how I deserve nothing, man, it becomes so much easier to look past the little things in life. That's what love covering a multitude of sins means. It literally means, in the grand scheme of things, even though I'm hurt, I'm going to choose my hurt not to hurt you. I'm going to free you from that so that it frees me from this so that we can move forward and eternity is waiting. Are you getting this? So do I want to stay bitter? Do I want to get better? The answer I choose will be seen in who I speak to about it. Don't say you want to get better, but all you do is gossip about it because it tells where your heart is, okay? If I want to get better, or be better, then I need to seek God's help with it. Psalms 34 says this, the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their cry. What does that mean? He's looking out for me, and he's listening to me. So if I will instead turn to him and let his ear be the one I talk to about this, I've never come out of a venting session with God and felt worse. I might not love the situation, but I certainly have been corrected because when I allow the Holy Spirit to correct me, I take it better than when someone else corrects me. Well, who do you think you are, God? Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Look what else Psalm says in 34. It says, the righteous cry out and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. The righteous person may have many troubles. Wait a minute. I was loving all that. But if I'm a righteous person, I shouldn't have many troubles. But it says that I may. So what it means is the impossibility that my life could be this way and still be righteous is actually a possibility. What does it mean? It means I could have a lot of troubles and still be good with God. Remember Job? Everyone thought he must have had sin in his life because his life looked like hell. But yet, God was like, no, you're righteous. Not because you did anything about it. I made you righteous, but you're still righteous. But you're going to have troubles. We're going to have troubles. It's how we deal with the troubles that determines whether we stay right or not. But the Lord delivers him from them all, it says. All right, I'm going to have problems, but I'm going to work on not creating problems. I'm going to work on not exacerbating problems. I'm going to work on not creating compound problems because a problem happened to me. See, the minute you go from victim to aggressor, your prayer must change. The minute you went from, I am the victim, to now I'm throwing stones too, God's like, shame on you. And you're like, how did this turn on me? Because of you. Because you turned from the victim into an aggressor. Vindicate me, O Lord. Examine my heart. Help me. Right now I'm hurt, which means I can do a lot of dumb things. When you're hurt, you can do dumb things. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to sit and wait until you help me. I'm going to get into a prayer closet. I'm going to, if it's a severe thing, maybe I'm going to fast and pray until my attitude gets right before I go and confront the person. Because if you go, here's the question. My question is, when you approach the confrontation, are you holding a stone or are you holding an olive branch? That's a whole nother message. Don't write that down. That's not my notes. That determines where your heart's at. Are you really over it? Okay, I'll move on because I was about to preach a whole nother message right there. Take your time, Pastor. I will. Number three, am I going to hold on or let it go? Well, it seems like you're asking the same question many ways. That's on purpose. Listen, am I going to hold on to it or let it go? Am I going to let this, what I'm really asking is, am I going to let this affect my future or am I going to leave it here at the intersection? Because you get to determine your carry-ons. You get to determine what you carry on your journey. You don't get to determine your call. You don't get to determine your direction as far as the God-given direction. You can choose where you want to go, but it doesn't mean you're right. But what you do get to choose is what you carry. Now, when I read the Bible, I see God tell Moses, carry your staff, bring it with you. God will tell us things to bring, but we have the ability to bring other things. Is what I'm bringing going to help me in my endeavor? And is it going to help me in my end? I've got to decide that. The burdens I don't give to God and let go of will weigh me down. They'll slow me down and potentially sit me down from opportunity. See, you think everything you carry will still allow you every opportunity. But the things in which you choose to carry can actually shut the door on opportunity. They can actually sit you down where you could have had opportunity because they limit you. A limitless God allows us the freedom to make a choice that can be limiting on us and on him. We've talked about this. We did a whole series on how can a limitless God be limited? Because he chooses to work off our faith, which if we choose to be limited in our faith, he will be limited in our world. He's limitless, but we chose that. Are you getting this? Okay, so what I carry matters. Look what it says in 12, 1 and 2 in Hebrews. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such great cloud of witnesses, what? Because all eyes are on us. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. What is he saying? Let it go! Let it go! Just watched Frozen 2 with my kids last night. Someone needed to know that. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. So again, God had a race marked out for us. He had a direction for us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of the faith. Have you ever tried to run with baggage? I know some of you heard the story. I'm in Peru. I'm supposed to be catching a flight. We allotted plenty of time because I don't like being last minute, especially international. Customs don't like me. I don't know why. I'm a likable guy. Traffic, not going to make the flight. Ask my translator if they're willing to run through traffic with me. They said yes because they're crazy. It's part of the Peruvian way. El Pastor, it's true. Listen, so I'm running through traffic with my translator screaming, pardon, pardon, pardon. So I'm screaming it too. I don't know what it means other than probably excuse me or caution. Get out of the way! Either way, running, 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 running. And I realized what I could have run very quickly took me three times as long because of all the baggage I was carrying. And then it made me think in life, well, it made me think in real life, I need to pack less. These outfits, they take up space when you're 6'2". Julie's like, how's your suitcase already full? I'm like, because my legs are taller than you. So my pants are twice as... Someone thinks that's mean. I chose to go get married in the Shire. Don't put it on her. It was me. I'm going to pay for that one later. But she's smiling for anyone that can't see her. What we should do creative team, we should get a camera that focuses on her so people don't get so offended at me when I make jokes. I kid. I'll pay. The heavier the baggage, the more it will cost me. The heavier the baggage, the more it'll cost me. And that's true in life and in all the airlines. The more I travel, the more I understand exactly the weight of everything I have. I have left shoes behind. Somebody knows what that feels like. Oh, they were well used. You've got to pick and choose what you're bringing on the journey. And so I've left things behind. See, we always want God to bring times of refreshing to us. And I always imagine God with a fresh cup of just this cold water, looking to give us times of refreshing. And we're all holding everything like, just bring it to my lips. Just bring it to my lips. And God's like, or drop all the stuff you're not supposed to be holding on to. Just let it go. It's right here. Everything you're asking for. We get to choose what we carry on. Someone getting something out of this? Oh, time says I got to keep moving. Number four, do I want to stay hurting or start healing? Questions you're asking yourself, questions you must answer at the crossroads. And here's the other thing. I got to go back to remind you, the devil is always hanging out at the crossroads trying to sway you. He's lobbying in the middle of the crossroad, but he's lobbying in agreement with your feelings. The most deadly thing. See, some people say, well, when you talk to people about, you know, not trusting their emotions and their feelings, that's when it turns into a cult. I was like, well, that's the Bible talks about it all the time, so I wouldn't go that far, first of all. But second of all, how many times have your emotions failed you? How many times have, like, I mean, I can tell you right now, there are times where all of a sudden I'm not emotional or not angry or not whatever about the situation. I go, huh. Like, if you see the same situation happening in someone else's world when you're completely neutral, you're like, why don't they get that right? Oh, why don't I get it right? Do I want to stay hurting or start healing? Healing is a process, but choosing to begin the process is your decision alone. John 5 says this, when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? Talking about the man that couldn't walk, and he's sitting by the water's edge waiting to be healed, thinking, you know, they were told that the angel stirs the water and he just needs to get in, but he can't get in, and he's in this position where Jesus is asking him, do you even want to get healed, or do you like where you're sitting? Why? Because in our pain, we can find comfort. Why? Because it draws attention to ourselves. People validate your pain. It creates an identity where maybe you didn't have an identity before in your own mind. All of a sudden, this area of pain, I mean, I see it in this generation all the time. I see it across generationally, but there are more people ever than before on medication for depression. More people ever than before dealing with the anxiety. More people, why? The question is, do you want to get better? And that is not to negate the people seriously struggling with depression. Hear me. I feel bad for those seriously dealing with depression and the person that claims to deal with depression just for attention. Because there are plenty of them. Because they're looking for an identity. They're looking for attention. They're looking for a focus. Do you want to get better? That's what Jesus said. He's asking the same question you've got to ask at the crossroads. Do I want to start healing or do I want to remain hurting? Because this is a decision that trumps all other decisions. Because if we choose to be well, it requires a responsibility to that end. What does that mean? It means if I decide I want to start healing, then I'm responsible to renew my mind. Then I'm responsible to pay attention to my circle. Then I'm responsible to control and harness my mouth and my emotions. Do you want to be well? Because if you say yes, then it creates a responsibility. And ain't nobody like responsibility. But all of you, you do. You're here on a Sunday morning when it is cold outside. Believe me, God can do it. He can heal you. He can change everything. He's willing and he's able. He's just waiting on you. Look at Psalms 147 says, he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. He does. He does it. Not he intends to do it. Not he wants to do it. He does. So if God is in the healing business, why are we still hurting? Do you really want to be well? Are you going to take the responsibility to do your part? Because God won't do what you can do. God's business is doing what you can't do after you do what you can do. See, we always say, God, I'll meet you halfway, but you do your half first. And God goes, I gave you feet. Get up. God can only heal those ready to move on. See, God doesn't, he doesn't put the cone of shame on you. Has anyone ever had a dog with surgery? I was just in Texas with one of my best friends, and he has this literally like wolf dog. It's literally a wolf dog. And this dog had to get surgery, and so it had this huge cone of shame on. And I just thought about it. See, God, he won't heal you before you're ready because he doesn't put a cone of shame on you. What does that mean? If you're not ready to be healed, then you're going to pick through all the stitches and re-hurt yourself. The whole point of the cone of shame is so that they can't get and mess around with what the surgery just had. See, God goes, if you're ready to heal, then we'll go through the process. But if all you're going to do is start the healing and then tear open the scar again because you're not ready to be healed, this is going to hurt you long term. So I'll wait until you're ready. How many are thankful God doesn't deal with cones of shame? God can only heal those ready to move on. Psalms 147:5, great is the Lord and mighty in his power. His understanding has no limits. Why would I say this right after what I just said? Because he already understands whether we're ready to heal or not. His understanding has no limit. What does that mean? You can't pretend you're ready for healing when you're not ready for healing. He already knows. He already knows whether you're ready, but not because he determined whether you're ready, because he knows what you've already predetermined. God can read through your sigh. He understands what your hesitation means. His understanding is limitless. Are you ready to be healed? So when we say we want to move on, but we don't, that we want healing, but we won't stay on the surgery table, he allows us instead to walk around with a limp until the day we're ready to actually walk through the process of healing. God, why am I walking so hurt? Why, I thought I'm supposed to be living a healed and whole life. And God's like, you're not ready for healing. You still talk about the problem like it happened yesterday. And it was 20 years ago. Let go of the bitterness. Choose to forgive. And maybe then we'll go through the healing process. But it's up to you. It's on your timetable. Because I wanted to deal with this 20 years ago. Lastly, number 5. Am I willing to forgive for the sake of my future? Not just for their sake, but also for my sake. Well, Chad, you just made that personal. I'm just trying to help you understand our decisions actually affect more than others. Obviously, they affect us, but our decisions can limit us or free us. That's what free will is. Matthew 6:14 says, "For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive who? You." But if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive who? You. That changes everything, because when I think about forgiveness, it's easy to hold on to something someone else did against me because I somehow feel, you know, I'm a better person than they are, and I've never given them a reason to do this, and they need to get right with me. And then I realize the thing I'm withholding from them has now put me in a predicament with God. In fact, the Bible says that if I come to lift up my hands in worship and bring a gift to the altar, I'm supposed to just leave it there and go get things right before I even come in and worship God. Because he goes, nope, your heart's not right. Put your hands down. Nope, you're going through the motion. You care about what that person thinks about you. You're not right. No, no, no. See, you're actually not really worshiping me in the way I want worship. Because I say worship me in spirit and truth. And the truth is you're not right. Somebody just needs to deal with it. Somebody needs to let it go. Somebody needs to forgive somebody for the sake of God forgiving them. We're like, no, grace covers that. No! This is the New Testament I'm reading. This is Jesus talking. Shut up! He said, shut up. I'm going on Facebook when I get home. Sinner. Forgiveness happens in two places, and I'm closing. The team can come back, or the keys. Someone tickle those ivories. Make me sound spiritual. Listen, forgiveness happens in two places. It frees you by making your heart light, and by the other's choice, it frees them. But it's the other's choice, not yours. We feel as though it's a chain reaction where when they do right, then I'll do right. That makes it easier. That does, and I understand they're going to be held accountable for what they do, and that's why it's so important for me to let them know they did something wrong. If somebody wronged me, and I haven't even told them that, I'm not giving them the chance to be forgiven and be freed. I need to go, you know, I also believe that God will say, well, they're ignorant to that because you didn't hold up your part, and I'm probably not going to hold them accountable for what you weren't willing to do to let them know. But I want to be freed, and I want to let the other person be free. So I'm going to let them know if something happens alone, not on social media. I'm going to talk to them the way the Bible tells me in Matthew. And I'm just going to say, hey, I don't even think you realize it. Maybe you don't notice it. But actually, it's something you did here. It hurt me. And I'm trying to make sure that I don't have offense rise up. So I just want to let you know. And if that person immediately says, man, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. The Bible says that we're supposed to forgive that person 7 times 70. Someone goes, well, they did it again next week. Well, who made you God? Remember, forgiveness happens in two places, and I've got to be careful about my heart. We can't control what they choose, but we can control to keep our heart right. We can make the decisions that keep us right. We're called to be like Christ. And last time Jesus stood in the courtroom on our behalf, when we had sinned against him, when we had done everything wrong, he chose to offer the olive branch, not the stone. You want to know whether you really forgive that person or not? Put yourself in a courtroom in your mind. And if the judge is ready to throw the book at him, are you willing to say, no, never mind, let's let it go? Because that's what forgiveness is. I'm so thankful that God chose not to throw the book at us, but that he was willing to listen to his son and say, know what? No, it's okay. I'm going to forgive them. I'm going to forgive them for every sin. I'm going to forgive them for hatred and for anger that has turned into sin. I'm gonna forgive them for murder. I'm gonna forgive them for everything that is wrong in this world. I'm gonna choose to forgive them, even though they don't deserve it. We're just called to be like Jesus.
We hope you've enjoyed this teaching from Metro Church.